from bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Ollie Barrett. Thanks very much. What a miserable, horrible, rotten, dreadful, dirty day it is in Salford here. We've had sleet and, well, freezing cold temperatures. We've had the bloody lot. This Friday, it is the 4th of December. Welcome to Friday's edition of the Richie Allen Radio Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, you wouldn't put a dog out in it now. Also, on saying that, I've just spent some of the last hour showering our golden retriever puppy, who's only a year old, and her name is Leia. Because she came back from her walk just after lunch. Came back from her walk absolutely filthy and soaked into the skin. So I had to put her in the shower and shower the absolute living bejesus out of her. That's what I've been doing for most of the last hour. Luckily enough, I had things fairly prepared for this afternoon ahead of this programme. I think this is the second or the third of the Friday afternoon programmes, this replacing the Sunday morning show. So it's good to be with you. Good. That's the one. Feeling pretty organised today and pretty happy with the day I've had. One of those old school guys. I had a few things to do today and I got them done. So I'm feeling satisfied and smug in my organisational capability kind of a thing. Went to the laundrette and took down my laundry to the laundrette. Marvellous. Got that out of the way. Laundrette, you said, doesn't your missus do your washing? You ask and you have every right to ask that question. Well, it's not all that it's cracked up to be being the BBG, you know. It's not the most glamorous. You'd imagine that my washing would be done, but no, the future Mrs. Allen is fairly useless, isn't she, Pat?
You have got me there. As useless as tits on a boar.
Yeah, imagine that. I have to do my own laundry, Tom.
No, could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Yeah, I do my own laundry. I go to see Tracy in the laundrette and I get my own laundry done. Caroline, you see, is a diva. A proper diva. More of a diva than Jean-Anne Crowley. Caroline is such a diva that twice a year Mariah Carey flies in to top up. You understand what I'm saying there? Flies in twice a year to top up, does Mariah Carey. Hi to Gail. How you doing, Gail? And hi to Veronica, who's listening to this garbage on the TuneIn app. That's right. On the TuneIn app. Welcome. Welcome to the programme. It is the 4th of December, so even a gone bean like me can do the basic mathematics. 3 sevens is 21. 21 plus 4 is 25. So it's 3 weeks to go to Christmas. 3 weeks until Daddy Christmas, Father Christmas, Santa, Santa Claus, Santy. Irish listeners will know. Santy. He's known as Santy in some parts of rural Ireland. Kris Kringle, Père Noël. Père Noël. Well, according to Jean-Claude Van Damme, yes, according to Jonathan Van Damme, Santa has been given the COVID vaccine, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, and children needn't worry, he'll be delivering questions, he'll be delivering presents on December 24th and 25th. Here was Van Damme answering questions from the public yesterday.
Good morning. Morning. I've got three children here at home, and they were asking this morning about Father Christmas and wanting to know whether he will be front of the queue to get the vaccine.
Oh, absolutely. The JCVI made a very special case for Father Christmas, and he is going to be absolutely at the top of our list.
Lovely. Van Damme, there is a wonderful Quentin Letts piece in The Times today, which sends up Jonathan Van Damme. We call him Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's the deputy chief medical officer, and he is the most foolish, goon-esque man ever to bestride the UK mass media. A proper fool. If you get a chance of reading it, Quinton Letts in today's Times. Looking back over the week that has just been, that's what we do on Freitag, on this relatively new show, still feeling my way around it. Of course, the vaccine being approved by the MHRA is the story of the week. The story. We'll come to that, of course. But released today, dear listener, we'll kick off with this. Released today, the brand new single from our friends, Fred and Richard, Right Said Fred, proper legends, kicking off today's programme. We're all criminals now, Right Said Fred. Yeah, the Freds are absolute geniuses. I love the Freds. There is no sycophancy here. I love the Freds. That's pretty cool, that. iTunes, Amazon. But I recommend that you go to rightsaidfred.com. Couldn't be any simpler. Rightsaidfred.com and download it. It is absolutely tip-top, that. We're all criminals. The Freds released today. Good job, eh? Hey, listen, before I go any further, I want to give a plug to something that won't cost you a dime, won't cost you a red cent, not even a penny farthing, not even a shilling, not even a truppence. I'm trying to think of any more old coins. A tanner. There you are. There you are. A tanner. It won't cost you anything. And that is, go and subscribe to Trigger Warning TV on YouTube, Trigger Warning TV, which is Hayden Hewitt's channel, with the assistance of Graham Booth. But of late, Hayden Hewitt has been presenting some absolutely terrific interviews on very serious subjects with brilliant guests. Like last night, he had Buck Angel on. I'm sure if you're following the trans issue, you'll know all about Buck Angel. He's had Count Dankula on. He's had the psychotherapist Emma Kenny on. These are brilliant interviews. And I want you to support this channel. There is no bigger proponent of free speech than Hayden Hewitt. He's a very, very good friend of mine. And regardless of whether your politics and his meet, whether they match, it doesn't matter a damn. He's terrific. Go to Trigger Warning TV on YouTube. Subscribe. Check out these recent interviews. And he's invited me, he has, to be his guest next Thursday. This coming Thursday, the 10th. Too many THs there to be pronounced. Jesus. Mary and Holy St. Joseph. Next Thursday, the 10th, I'll be on with him. YouTube.com/triggerwarning.tv, Buck Angel, Emma Kenny, and Count Dankula. Great interviews. He's very, very talented, is the boy Hayden Hewitt. I recommend you check him out. Do it now. Subscribe, or I'll beat the granny out of you. And then I'll beat the granny out of your granny. Do you understand? Thank you. I talk tough. Big story in today's Telegraph. Today's Daily Telegraph, all about Scotch Egggate. Have you been following that? Have you, Scotch Egggate? Big story. It's a sad and a worrying story, I would argue. Overzealous police patrol. Let me read that again. I read it all wrong. Overzealous police patrol pubs and argue with landlords over Scotch eggs. You might have imagined that headline came from Viz magazine or from the Weekly World News. But no, this is in the Telegraph and it's true. Officers asked customers to leave after eating despite guidelines to only enforce rules as a last resort. I'll read you some of the article. Police have been criticised for their overzealous enforcement of the new rules on pubs. Landlords have reported officers arguing over whether Scotch eggs were a substantial meal and threw out customers who had finished eating. Did you imagine in your wildest dreams when you were at the police academy with Officer Mahoney and Hooks and Hightower, did you imagine that you would be arguing with young men and young women? Landlords these days tend to be young men and women, good. And they're working on the margins. Very difficult to run pubs in this day and age. You're standing there arguing with them over whether a Scotch egg is a substantial meal and therefore they are allowed to serve alcohol in tier two areas. This is scandalous. The chief executive of Young's, by the way, if you like your real ale, Young's Real Ale is the greatest pint of cask conditioned ale in the world, bar none. Don't want any of your tweets. Stick your tweets now up your jacksy. I'm telling you the way it is. If I say Young's is the best pint of cask conditioned ale in the world, well, therefore it must be, because I know everything, don't I? No, I don't, obviously. Landlord is good as well. Timothy Taylor, Landlord. Anyway, Patrick Dardis, the chief executive of Young's, said officers in London on Wednesday told customers to get out of pubs as soon as they had finished their meals, telling them they couldn't order another drink. And I said today on Twitter, and I wasn't trying to be a big fella, this is the definition of a police state. An argument about whether a Scotch egg constitutes a substantial meal. Obviously, the police officers in question weren't listening to the greatest television presenter that ever lived, Kay Burley, the Ginger Ninja. She had a conversation with the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, on Wednesday about Scotch eggs, and they cleared it up between them. Couldn't be simpler.
I want to ask you about Scotch Eggate before I let you go. You know, it seems funny to some, the papers making fun of it this morning, but for many people in the hospitality industry, it's very, very serious. They face huge fines if they don't get this right. We don't know what a substantial meal is and what it isn't. Even the government doesn't know. Tell me, is a Scotch egg a substantial meal?
Well, a substantial meal is a well-established concept in hospitality.
Yeah, but what does it mean to you?
And so people... of course, a Scotch egg that is that served as a substantial meal is a substantial meal.
A substantial meal is really whatever you think it is. Surely, as a customer, if you go to a premises, if you go to a pub, a cafe, whatever, that serves alcohol, whatever you determine to be substantial must therefore be substantial. These are crazy times, huh? These are crazy times. Everybody's going mad. Did you notice that if you're out and about? People are not themselves. People are not well. And I put it down to the fact that the country's been under house arrest since March, more or less. And I think people are, their eccentricities are coming to the fore more and more. I should be a rapper, me. They really are. I'm seeing it myself. I'm seeing it when I'm out and about, when I'm out running, when I'm out and about walking. Story in the Mail today. People are losing their minds. Here's the headline. Amazon courier is sacked for calling garage owner 54 a dickhead in delivery note for a carving knife after he refused to reveal his date of birth to prove he was over 18. Yeah. So basically, Amazon courier rocks up in van, knocks on door of garage with knife that was ordered. Protocol means he must be satisfied the recipient is indeed over 18. A 55-year-old guy answers. His name is on the parcel. 54 even. Obviously 54. Wouldn't give his date of birth to the thickest delivery man who ever walked the face of the earth. The courier stormed off, and in the electronic delivery note, called the customer a dickhead. Because the customer checked his Amazon app, my God, that evening. The customer did, the 54-year-old guy, and he found a note from the courier saying the packages were handed to dickhead.
What kind of fuckery are you?
Oh, God, Mr. Delivery Man, with regret, you're fired. It's COVID, I'm telling you. It's driving folks mad. More on pubs and new restrictions coming into play in Wales this evening. More on all of that shortly. But there was a big breaking story this lunchtime about the delivery of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine that was approved this week by the MHRA. Here's Sky News. Feast your ears on this development.
Good afternoon. The first batch of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine has arrived in the UK, but with fewer doses than expected.
Government has said that 10 million doses would be available for use by the end of the year, but it's now thought that number is going to depend on the manufacturer.
The UK has ordered 40 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, enough to vaccinate 20 million people, as two doses are needed.
The government says 800,000 doses will be available from next week. That's when priority groups will start to be vaccinated.
The challenge is distributing and storing the jab, as it must be kept at minus 70 to minus 80 degrees. However, it does remain stable for a limited time in warmer temperatures, allowing for it to be transported around the country.
When it comes to who's going to get this vaccine first, residents in care homes and their carers, anyone aged 80 and over, and frontline health and social care workers are at the top of the list.
So what's going on then? Well, you do come across a guy called Professor Carol Sikora from the World Health Organization. He's on television quite a bit. He was on talk radio with Mike Graham this lunchtime. It is chaos, he said.
It's chaos. I can tell you, like, it is chaos.
Is it?
A meeting about it. There's only half the number of vaccine vials have arrived. And remember, you've got to have double the amount for everybody. They've got to come back in 4 weeks or 3 weeks to get the second shot. And then you're not immune for another week after that. So it's a long process. The idea was the care homes, but then who's going to actually do it in the care home? Injecting vaccines is trivial. I mean, you can train a healthcare assistant within an hour to give an effective vaccination. You don't need to have health professionals. You do have to have health professionals standing by in case you get reactions. So you ideally want a nurse, a doctor to be in the area, but the actual administration is relatively trivial as a procedure. It's not a skilled procedure. So there's enough people ready to do it. The question is all the logistics about collecting the data, identifying the patients, making sure they are who they say they are, all this sort of thing. It's so obvious, but it is time consuming.
Yes.
But, you know, we have a minister that's going to sort it out for us. I don't know what he's doing all day, but this is his problem.
Minister for vaccinations. Yeah, well, this is the problem.
I don't like the way Carol Sikora said the administering of a vaccine is a very trivial thing and you can get anybody to do it. Don't like that very much at all. But apparently the government couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. Thank God, you might say. Gives us more time to reach people. You know, it has to be stored at minus 70 degrees and all of that. It has to be taken to care home residents, right? But they have no plans for any of that, it would appear. Although they're still saying they'll have their 800,000 units by the end of the year. And yesterday we learned, I don't want to dwell on this, I called it a bombshell revelation yesterday. Maybe I was getting excited, but I think it's bombshell. We learned yesterday, I was sent a document by Martin, who's an NHS specialist nurse, who will be responsible for administering and organising the nurses and healthcare workers in his hospital. He'll be making sure they get the vaccine. And he was given documentation by the MHRA. When he sent it to me, the MHRA is the allegedly independent regulatory body which decides whether medicines get passed for use or not in this country. And Martin was sent documents by the MHRA. And when he sent them to me, they were also published on gov.uk. You can see the documents for yourself. And in them, in the information sheet given to those who will administer the vaccine, it says the effect on fertility is unknown. But that information is omitted on the information booklet or leaflet given to the recipient. Healthcare professionals are told impact on fertility is unknown. That information is omitted on the information given to the recipient. That is deadly serious. It's 25 minutes past three. How you doing? It's the BBG live in Salford. As I've said already, I'll say it again. Couldn't be a worse day today. Horrendous weather. Sleet, we've got the whole lot. They've had thunder snow in Scotland, apparently. Thunder snow. Don't ask me, I have no idea. Like a lot of things, I have no idea. Here's Barry White for you. I can't get enough of your
love, baby. Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge.
Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
And it's exactly 3:30 here on December 4th. It is Friday's program. Busy old week on the show. If you missed any of it, it's all archived. Lots of ways to hear it. iTunes, of course. Spotify, it's on there. Podomatic.com, that's where I upload it. Check it out there. And it's still on YouTube. I'm not spending any time on that, as I used to. I'm basically just putting it on and giving any old holding image to it and putting it up there. And that's a temporary thing until you get used to the fact that it won't be on there for much longer. Now, new national restrictions come into force in Wales later this evening to try and curb the spread of COVID-19, allegedly. These new rules include a ban on pubs, restaurants and cafes serving alcohol on the premises. They come into force at 6 o'clock UK time today and will be reviewed on the 17th of December ahead of UK-wide rules over Christmas. Now, the Welsh Government has taken a huge backlash, or has received, I should say, a huge backlash over this from business owners and other political parties. It is sickening, really, what is being done to hospitality and the impact it's having on people's lives. Here's Joanne Cooney. Joanne runs the Irish Bar in Cardiff. Now, I think there are more than one Irish bar in Cardiff, but there is a bar called the Irish Bar. Joanne Cooney speaking earlier to BBC News.
After today, at 6 o'clock, you can go into a pub, but you can't have any alcohol. But the pub can open from 10, 11 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, but only serve soft drinks, teas and coffees. I mean, a bar with no beer is like a car with no engine. It doesn't work. So we just, I don't understand what the logic is behind it.
Don't know what the logic is, she said, behind it. A pub without drink is like a car without an engine. It's astonishing. Interesting hybrid accent there, Joanne Cooney. I love those hybrid accents, you know, kind of half Irish, kind of half Welsh. Radio 5 Live today spoke with a woman called Michelle, who lives in Chepstow. Chepstow is in Wales. She tells Radio 5 Live, as I just said, Nikki Campbell, that she's going to Bath, the town of Bath, for a night out, as she can't have a night out in Wales. Have a listen.
I'm just very excitedly packing for a night away in Bath. I live in Chepstow, which is southeast Wales, and we were planning on going to Cardiff for Christmas shopping, dinner, maybe a glass of wine, you know, reckless behaviour with my husband. And
please.
Yeah. And now we can't go to Cardiff, so we're going to Bath.
Yeah, okay. And you're going to behave properly in the Absolutely. Confines of the pub, are you?
You're going to behave properly, said Nikki Campbell, huh?
Are you?
Absolutely. You know, the reckless behaviour is feeling like having a glass of wine is reckless, but... Yeah, I'm just looking forward to being sat at a table with having a great steak or a great piece of fish cooked by a really good chef, enjoy a bottle of wine and some conversation with my husband in a fully safe environment. And Bless. I'm really confident because the places we've booked, they've all got track and trace, you know, and that, I feel more confident going to a restaurant than I do actually, to be honest, going Christmas shopping.
Well, previously, of course, let me see now. People could only travel out of Wales if it was essential. I suppose you say this is essential. But people in Wales, you can get out, you can break the state line now. You can break through the border now, but it has to be to a tier 2 area. You can't travel to tier 3 areas. So you're safe, you're good, you're sound.
Did you ever in your wildest fantasies imagine a woman would be debating or chatting on national radio with a bloke about having to leave Wales to go to Bath for a night out, and then discussing whether it's okay to do that because Bath is in a tier 2 area and not in a tier 3 area, because if it was in a tier 3 area, you wouldn't be able to go and you might be arrested. Did you ever imagine you'd be listening to this? I can't say that I did, to be honest.
And you're on it, yeah.
Absolutely, I've read the real rules, happy to follow them. We will go to Bath and spend our money. I'm devastated for Cardiff. I'm devastated for Wales and the hospitality sector, which I've worked in for 30 years, that I adore. People, you know, brains saying that they're closing 100 pubs because they cannot make it work.
That's right. Brains Brewery, which has a lot of pubs which are managed by people on behalf of Brains, said this morning on national television, 100 pubs are going to go out of existence because of this.
Independent pubs saying exactly the same thing. This is crucifying them. And I'm yet to see the evidence that this is sensible, needed behaviour. Because if it were, surely it would be in place right across the UK. And please, that's not me inviting that to happen.
I'd love a night out, you know that. Honestly, I'm not going to depress you now. I'm not going to bring you down. I'd love a night out. It's been so long since I've had a night out. Months. Longer than months. Just to get out. I'm that desperate for a night out now, I'd even date a ginger, honestly. Honestly, that's how much I miss going out. I would date a ginger woman with alopecia, even.
What kind of fuckery are you?
Yeah. Speakeasies. I think we're going to have speakeasies. Anybody for a speakeasy? Isn't that what they did when Prohibition came in the US, speakeasies? Anybody think about opening a speakeasy in Salford? Anybody? I'll be there with bells on. Can even wear the old clobber. Get the old Glenn Miller on the stereo. Anybody for a speakeasy? You know what's totally and utterly depressing about this bullshit? Is that the Office for National Statistics published new data today, wait for it, showing that less than 1 in 100 people in the whole of England has this bullshit virus, whatever it is. Less than 1 in 100 people in England has the virus, and even less in Wales and Scotland. Yes, I did say I would even date a ginger woman with alopecia rather than carry on like this, not getting a night out. Robert Cuff is the BBC's expert on statistics, easy for me to say, and he explains this, that less than 1 in 100 people in the whole of England has the virus. Here's Robert Cuff, BBC News Today.
Well, so the figures from the ONS say that in England, we've kind of got a clearer picture than we've had for a while. Rates look to be falling pretty much everywhere apart from the Northeast, and they now reckon that just over 1 in 100 people, just under 1 in 100 people in England have the virus. And that brings us back to where we were about a month ago, around kind of the start of the last week in October. So we're moving in the right direction, but still at a level that was worrying about a month ago. Every time we've been discussing this over recent weeks, we've been saying it's a mixed picture throughout England. It's very different depending on where you look. That's not the case really anymore. Falling everywhere except for the Northeast. And now the Northwest, which consistently has been the highest, has now kind of come down below there and is no longer the area with the most infections across the across England.
What about the picture in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland? We are about to go to Wales for the daily briefing, I should say.
Wait for this now. So after it was announced that pubs and restaurants would not be allowed to sell alcohol in Wales after 6 o'clock, this guy gives you the ONS figures. How many people out of 100 in Wales do you think has coronavirus or whatever it's supposed to be? Listen.
Briefing, I should say so.
Well, in Northern Ireland, we see a continued downward move. It's probably too soon for kind of that 1 week fall in restrictions to show through in the figures. In Wales and Scotland, we've got slightly different pictures where it's been bumping up and down. After the firebreak, we saw infections falling in Wales. That fall has stopped, according to the most recent figures. In Scotland, there was a slight rise, and that's come down in the most recent week. So in Wales, really, there has been some worry in recent weeks about rising numbers of cases. Some of that is driven by increased testing. But these figures from the ONS are suggesting that the fall in infections in Wales...
I've got to tell you what the number is. That's taken from a television programme. Excuse me. The number of people in the whole of Wales affected with coronavirus or infected with it, it's one in 157 Welsh citizens. Only one out of every 157 people in Wales allegedly has coronavirus. And that doesn't mean, of course, that the one in 157 is sick. Most likely, you're talking about asymptomatic people. And they are destroying people's lives and livelihoods in Wales based on that. Isn't it astonishing? At 19 minutes to four on Friday, December 4th, 2020. Why do these people not ignore and come together, all of them, as an industry and say, fuck off. We're going to open as we normally would. And then put the ball back into the court of the politicians and the police. Why do they accept it? I have no idea. It's time for us to have a giggle. I'm going to do this as often as I can on Fridays. I love an old radio phone-in prank. I did one or two of them in my career, but I don't have the recordings to hand, which is a real pisser for me. I did two of them in my career. One of them was okay. One of them was very funny, but I don't have it anymore. And the radio station I worked for certainly doesn't have it anymore. But I love a good radio phone-in prank. We had one last week, which is the granddaddy of them all. It's the pièce de résistance. The Indian guy working for the government calling the Irish guy about the baby and the birth cert. That, it doesn't get any better than that. This one's a bit childish. It's not as funny. Well, it is as funny in some ways. It's not as witty. You may have heard of Scott Mills. Scott Mills is a BBC... Yeah, he is a BBC radio presenter. He still works for the BBC. He's a well-known radio presenter in the UK. And he had a gig on BBC Radio 1 for some years. And on that gig, he did prank telephone calls and he was very good at doing it. Very good and very funny. And this one is, let me give you the basic premise. Very basic. On this one, which was done about 11 or 12 years ago, he phones a Chinese restaurant, a takeaway restaurant, and he gives an order. And then he phones a second Chinese restaurant. And he asks the first Chinese restaurant whom he's just given an order to, he asks restaurant one to read back the order and then connects the second restaurant to the call. You may have come across this in your travels. You may not. It's very funny. Have a listen. It is Friday. I love this stuff.
So I'd like you to feel and love our brand new game. This is what we did at the weekends. See, this is the kind of exciting weekends that I have. So I mean, if you come and let me stay at your place, this is the kind of entertainment I can offer, like 24/7. So we phone up a Chinese takeaway, and you make an order, right? And then what we do is put them on hold, and you call up another Chinese takeaway. Then we get the first one to repeat the order to the second one, but the second one thinks they're making a new order, and it all gets really confusing. If you think this is complicated, just listen to this. It'll all become clear.
Hi.
Hello. I wonder if I can make an order, please.
If you can, yeah.
Okay, I'd like one egg foo young.
Foo young chicken.
Pork, oh, chicken, please.
Chicken, yeah.
And then, what soup do you have?
I only got not much to choose from. I've got chicken, sweet corn, crab meat, or hot and sour.
Crab meat would be really good. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Some prawn crackers.
Yeah.
Also, maybe do you have lemon chicken?
Yeah,
I'd like one of those, please.
Thank you.
And also, because there's quite a few people coming around, I'd like to have four egg fried rice, if possible.
Four portion egg fried rice, yeah.
Yeah. If you could you just read the order back to me to make sure I got it right?
Yeah, so you've got one,
Oh, give me a second. Sorry. One of my friends is coming in. I think they want to add to the order.
Okay.
Give me a second, and I'll get you to read the order back to them, all right?
Okay.
Give me a sec. Right, he's on hold, and now let's call Chinese Takeaway 2.
Hello?
Hello, can I make an order, please?
Yeah.
If you can just hang on a minute, my friend will give you the order, all right?
Yeah.
Okay, can you read back the order, please?
So you got one chicken egg foo young.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah?
Yeah, you got one chicken egg foo young.
Chicken and egg foo young. Chicken foo young, yeah?
Yeah, and then one crab meat sweet corn soup.
Yeah.
And a portion of prawn crackers.
Yeah.
And lemon chicken.
Yeah.
Four portion egg fried rice.
Yeah.
That's it?
Okay, thank you.
So, how soon can you get here?
About half an hour, okay?
Yeah, under what name?
Pardon?
What name?
The driver. The delivery driver, what name you mean?
Well, we don't do delivery.
Huh?
We don't do delivery.
We do delivery?
We don't.
Are you coming to collect it?
Yeah, you come and collect it, yeah.
Oh, you're coming to collect it?
Yeah, you come and collect it, you ordered it.
Oh, right. I thought you said it's a delivery, innit?
No, we don't do delivery at all. The only delivery we do was a pizza up the road.
Oh, so you're coming to collect this food, yeah?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
Okay. When you're coming?
Well, what do you mean? I said, when you're coming, not me.
Huh?
You come and pick them up.
Pick what up?
Well, you just ordered the food from the takeaway shop here.
You just ordered the food from this takeaway.
What would you mean?
I said you just ordered the food from this takeaway. Yeah? Are you coming to pick it up or you want it delivered?
Which takeaway are you?
Hey. Listen, mate, forget it, okay?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, you know, speaking of nights out, be Jesus and all of that, I was supposed to be seeing Jeff Lynne. Did I tell you that? I do have a propensity sometimes to tell you something 722, sometimes 723 times. We were supposed to see the great Jeff Lynne, ELO, again in October, late October. Just gone, obviously, but that went by the wayside because of all this COVID stuff. As I'm plugging lots of other people, let me plug some of the excellent guests that were on the Richie Allen Radio Show this week. I'm on my own, you know, so I don't have the time nor the inclination even to put together a rewind package. But we've had some fantastic guests on this programme over the last 6 years, and this week has been no different. If you missed any of the programme, do go to podomatic.com. That's where it's initially uploaded. Remember, it is a live radio show. You might be listening to this on iTunes, on Spotify, Podomatic or whatever, YouTube even. It is what you are hearing is the archive of a live radio show. Yeah. So you missed anything this week. You might have missed the excellent Johnny Vedmore. Top man. Dr. Vernon Coleman was on with me on Monday. Posey Parker was on with me. And Emma, the businesswoman working for a Fortune 500 company, in a senior role, came on to talk about having to take a vaccine against your will. That was terrific. Had a brilliant phone-in show this week as well with some amazing callers. And last night, Jenny Lowe's former NHS nurse and trainer and Piers Corbin were on the programme. If you missed any of that, it's all there for you. It's all there. It's very easy to find. If the time is 4:09, what time are you finishing at, Baldy? I have no idea. As long as it lasts, there are other things I'd like to speak with you about. I think we'll probably go till about 4:30 today. Hey, listen, speaking, I don't know, are we far enough away from dinner or supper, are we? You see, because this radio programme is listened to in 95 countries, it is, by the way, ask Hayden Hewitt, ask Paul Ripley, 95 countries this programme is listened to in. Yeah, put that where the sun doesn't shine, talk radio. 95 countries. So it could be dinner time somewhere. It could be breakfast time somewhere. But I'm going to tell the story anyway. It's a true story. It's not an urban legend. It's true. I know it to be true. Speaking of Chinese restaurants, I'm going to be accused now of bigotry. But there's no bigotry in this. This is a factual story. A friend of mine worked for a radio station in Cork and he covered this story back in the late 1990s. Absolutely true. There was, at one time, in Macroom, or near Macroom, there was a mobile Chinese takeaway. So a Chinese family, or a Chinese bloke, had a caravan. And in the caravan, he had lots of big pots, big silver pots, and he had a gas stove, and he did Chinese takeaway there, and you could get whatever you wanted from him. Rice dishes and what have you. I shouldn't be telling you. I'll tell it. And that was fine. And a bloke who was well known to my journalist mate in Cork was pissed out of his brains one Saturday night, as you are inclined to be every now and then. if you sound a bit like me. And he passed this takeaway van, this caravan, and he ordered himself something called a mini special, which was curry and rice and bits of chicken and one thing and another. Following morning, got up and had only eaten a little bit of the dish. And his father said to him, "You didn't finish your takeaway. You must have been absolutely pissed out of your brains." And the lad said, "Well, it tasted a bit off." And the old man said, "But you were pissed." He said, "I know I was pissed. It tasted a bit off, so I didn't eat it." This is the true story. The father was working in a local college as a biology teacher and did some work at Cork Regional Hospital. And he decided that he would take the Chinese dish in to be tested. And after a week or so, they got the results back. And he said to his son, "Got the results back on that food that you didn't like, that was a bit off. Did you?" said the son. Now, he had no food poisoning, he was fine. Didn't have any food poisoning. "I did," says Dad. "By any chance," he said, "were you ripping the piss out of the guy on the night in question or any other night?" No, says the son. "Why?" And the father said, "Well, because they found semen in the dish that you brought home."
1, 2, 3.
Semen. Don't take the piss out of the Chinese guys behind the counter. Ever. Ever. This is the Young Rascals. That is the Young Rascals on the Richie Allen radio show. We're fast approaching 4 o'clock. Hi to Alan, otherwise known as Bass Ninja on Twitter. He asks me, "Is it true that Greater Manchester Police are doing border roadblocks to stop people travelling between tiers 2 and tiers 3 and all of that?" I don't know. You're a papillon bitter. I do not know. Charlotte is in Burnley. Long-time listener. How you doing, Charlotte? Hope you're well. Charlotte has a speakeasy. She's got a garage conversion. She's got a bit of an entertainment venue in her garage. She's got the bar. She's got the speakers, the music. She's got the drinks. She's got the lot. Lovely jubbly. Lovely jubbly. Steve says he's been thrown out of more bars than I've eaten bowls of muesli. I've been thrown out of one or two bars myself over the years. Never for anything serious. Never for violence. I was in a bar in Munich in the year 2000 with a great friend of mine called Emmett McCarthy, who's settled and living in Munich now with his wife, who is a German lady. We were thrown out of a karaoke bar for laughing at one of the karaoke singers. It didn't go down well with the head barman there, nor did it go down well with the bouncer. They asked us to stop laughing. And the reason we were laughing was because some German bloke was singing Suspicious Minds, you know, the great Elvis song, but he couldn't say suspicious. For some reason, he was singing "We Can't Go On Together With Suspicious Minds." Suspicious Minds. Suspicious Minds. He wasn't an Oriental German or a Chinese German. He was German. And he was singing Suspicious Minds. We'd had too many pints at that stage. Too many Helles. Too many pints of Helles. We laughed at the guy and we just got asked to leave. "You must leave now. Stop laughing." So we just left and that was the end of that. Hi to Natalie Stacey. How you doing, Natalie? Hope you're well. Natalie's a musician, rock chick, extraordinaire. Let's move on, crack on with Friday's programme. They're desperate for us to take this vaccine, aren't they? They're out in force today, the professors and the academics. Professor David Salisbury, there's a great name, David Salisbury, former government immunisation director, was on BBC Radio 5 Live today. David Salisbury, just take the bloody vaccine.
You know, the clinical trial was 40,000 people for the Pfizer vaccine. And we know a great deal about the safety profile of this vaccine. So the choice is pretty stark. Leave yourself at risk of dying from a virus that you can't see, but it's around us. Or follow the recommendation and have the vaccine. Hesitancy in this occasion, I think, does not have a place. There are silly scare stories around about the RNA changing our DNA, which it can't do. And I think this is a time to follow the advice you're given.
Follow the advice you're given. Do what you're told. If we say to take the vaccine, take the bloody vaccine. He wasn't alone today. A guy called Callum Semple is a professor based in Liverpool. He's also a member of SAGE. SAGE is the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. It's the group of scientists basically telling the government what to do. Callum Semple, based in Liverpool and SAGE member on Sky. The presenter, Gillian Joseph, said, "It's been very quick coming to market. Surely you understand why some people might say, you know what, I'll wait and see what happens when others take it first." Professor Callum Semple.
I can understand that, but from where I'm sitting, the reason that the trials could be conducted quickly was because there were a great many people being affected with the virus, so it was easy to recruit and relatively easy to look at the comparisons between those that had been vaccinated and those that had not. I have every confidence in my colleagues in the MHRA. I know several of them personally. I know that they've been working every day, long hours, weekends, late into the evening, to scrutinise the safety data very carefully. So I've got no doubts that the safety aspects and the scrutiny that our regulators have done has been done properly and with great care.
But how confident are you that people will willingly take the vaccine?
Pardon me. There's always been people who have raised anxieties about vaccine safety. It's going to be very hard to persuade people that have got fixed views or conspiracy views. And really, it shouldn't be pale male men like myself in academic institutions promoting this. We need to get the message into the social influencers, the people that are celebrities in the media much more than people like me, to get this message across.
Get this message across by getting influencers. By getting celebrities to endorse the vaccine, celebrities whose parents maybe came down with COVID. It's not sinister at all, is it?
Message across. And when they're telling the story that their parents have been killed by COVID, or their brothers and sisters have had breast cancer and chemotherapy and are therefore at risk, that's the message that needs to go across. This is a virus that is ruining people's lives, and even people who survive are being left damaged with the symptoms of long COVID and lung fibrosis. This is a vaccine that will prevent these problems.
Professor Callum Semple, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. Thank you.
They are so unbelievably deferential to these people, aren't they? Thanks so much for sharing your expertise with us. Not a challenge, not a peremptory challenge, nothing from Gillian Joseph. They're mentioning long COVID all day today as well, of course. Yeah, long COVID is horse manure. It's bullshit. It's the figment. It's a figment of the imagination of those who are driving this agenda. Tell people that, oh, this is not just a virus. Oh, no, it isn't just a respiratory infection. Oh, no, not at all. Well, this is very serious. And a lot of people will have symptoms going on for months and months, maybe even years. Long COVID, it's a debilitating illness. All this garbage. It's one of the ways they're hoping to convince people to take the vaccine. Take the vaccine, because it's not just about feeling ill for a week or a few days with a sore throat and an infection. No. You could get long COVID. Matt Hancock's long COVID. Tell you what we'll do now. Take headlines. It's 3.5 minutes past the hour. When we come back from headlines, we're going to talk about climate change for a moment. I know. It's really entertaining today, isn't it? Climate change when we come back. Marvellous. Headlines.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. UK government sources say the chances of a Brexit deal have receded, but the EU's denying putting forward new demands. China says Australia's reaction to a tweet by a Chinese official may have further damaged relations. US President-elect Joe Biden says he'll urge Americans to wear face masks for his first 100 days in the White House. And farmers' protests in India continue after a second round of talks with the government failed to break the deadlock.
How wonderful, eh? Creepy Joe Biden says that in the first 100 days in office, he will encourage Americans to wear face masks, which do nothing, nada, niente, sod all, Face masks don't do anything to prevent infection at all. If you don't believe me, look at World Health Organization advice on face masks pre-April this year. Are these the times we're living in? I think they are. Mother of Divine Jesus and all of that. Shall we have some Diana Ross then, shall we? I love this tune. This is Diana's version of Ain't No Mountain High Enough on Friday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Lovely to be with you this Friday afternoon. Going till about 4:30 today. Bit of climate change news when we come back. I think Diana Ross is a bit underrated myself. You might say, Richie, how is that possible? How could she be underrated? She had so many number one singles with the Supremes, hugely successful solo career, but she is underrated by Motown legends past and present. They don't rate Diana Ross very highly as a singer, but I think she's terrific. She was in the arena before lockdown, Manchester Arena. It was a sellout. Thought about it, considered it, but it was ridiculously expensive. The divas usually are, aren't they? You know, when Mariah Carey comes to the arena, which she does, when Britney comes to the arena, which she does, ridiculously expensive tickets. Way beyond what you'd pay for artists that are just as successful, and in some cases, more successful. You know, you wouldn't pay to see U2, for example, what you would pay to see the likes of Mariah Carey. You wouldn't pay to see Bruce Springsteen what you would pay to see the likes of Kylie Minogue or Madonna or Britney Spears. Shocking, really. And in many cases, you go and see Britney Spears, you go and see Madonna. I've never seen either Britney Spears nor Madonna, nor would I. I have a lot of time for Madonna's early pop music. I like it. I'm a pop music fan. I love my pop music. I've got the Immaculate Collection on vinyl and I love listening to it sometimes. I know. You're gay, aren't you, Richie? I am. You're a gay boy? I am. I'm coming out of the closet today. So it's incredible that she's underrated. I think Diana Ross is amazing, personally. It is coming up for 12 minutes past four. Let's finish off today with a little bit of climate change nonsense. By the way, I disavow myself of my earlier remark about my sexuality. I'm as straight as a seven bob note, me. Let's swiftly move on to climate change before I talk myself into even more trouble. My mate Cliff, who's a long-time listener and a great supporter of the programme, asked me the other day, was I in the Freemasons? Are you in the Freemasons, Richie? He said. I said, what the fuck? I said, no. Why would I be in the Freemasons? Oh, he said, you get accused of it. Do I? I said, I've never heard that. I know David was accused of it before. David Icke was accused of being in the Freemasons. And no, the answer is no. I've never been in any club or association. I was in the Boy Scouts for a few weeks until we had to do Bob a Job in the Scouts, in the Cubs. We called them Cubs. I was in the Cubs, which is the very young Boy Scouts. And if I remember rightly, the lads who ran that, the leaders, were lovely, lovely men. And they were in the Cubs and the Scouts for years and years and years. And I was in the Cubs and I liked it until we had to do Bob a Job, which is where they gave you a sponsorship card and you put your little woggle on. Is it a toggle or a woggle? It's a fucking woggle, is it? Excuse my French. A toggle, and you had your jumper, your Gansey, and you had your little Cubs cap. And Bob a Job was you had to raise money for the Cubs by doing odd jobs for your neighbours. But I didn't fill too many names on the card and I didn't get too much money and I was too embarrassed. So I got my mother, I was 7 years old at the time, I got my mother to take my card and my £2 or whatever it was up to the Cubs and I quit. I quit on the Cubs. That's the last association I was ever involved in. When I was in Spain some years ago, I'll tell you about the Masons, the Freemasons. When I was in Spain working in radio, the oft-mentioned, the wonderful diva that is Caroline Tisserand, the future Mrs. Allen, ran a very successful bar and she was loved. And when things were becoming difficult for everybody in Spain, post the manufactured 2008 crash, one of the things I looked at very carefully and nearly did it was owning not owning the bar outright, but managing a bar for a brewery in Nottingham, a lovely bar. There were some lovely people there that I'm still in touch with. And I thought about doing that, and I came very close to doing it. And there was a man who ran a B&B in Nottingham who used to come in to Caroline's bar in Spain. And he was a bit connected. He used to run the Commodore in Nottingham in the 70s and 80s, which is a very famous club. Clubland, you know, Phoenix Nights type thing, but much more sophisticated. And this gentleman, whom I won't name because he might not appreciate me naming him, even though I suppose people in Nottingham can probably figure it out. But he said to me, if you do end up running a bar or a business even in Nottingham, I'll propose you for membership to the Masons. He didn't say Freemasons, he said Masons. And I said, I don't want to have any. This day job was making this type of programme, you know, independent radio on the radio. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to be involved in anything like that. He thought, you know, it's a network, Richie. You know, one hand washes the other, that sort of thing. That's the only time in my life anybody ever mentioned the Masons. My mate Cliff is in business, and he said he has often wondered about it. But no, one thing you'll never get from me is you'll never get any lies from me. I'm not a member of any organisation, secret society, the Masons, the Freemasons, lodges, or any of that garbage. Not at all. Not a chance. Not a chance. Apparently somebody said they met me in Manchester some years ago, and I admitted to them that I was in the Masons, which of course is bollocks. I didn't, and I'm not. There you go. But then you might say, well, you couldn't tell us if you were, could you, Richie? Exactly. Watch how I shake hands with people. That'll give it away. Now, you know, the UK government has destroyed the economy and has added hundreds of billions of pounds to the national debt. It's ruined lives. Millions of jobs are disappearing. Many of these jobs will never come back. We've never seen anything like this ever, and it's only the beginning. But if things couldn't get worse, or maybe you thought things couldn't get worse, well, you've got another think coming. Listen to Adam Bolton on Sky News today. Oh, it's not good news.
Thomas Moore, thanks very much indeed. Well, another UK first of sorts. The UK has become the first major nation to announce that it will cut greenhouse gases in line with the 2015 Paris Agreement. Boris Johnson has said that Britain will reduce emissions by more than two-thirds from their levels in 1990 within the next decade. That will be faster than any other major economic nation. Scientists have welcomed the news but say it doesn't go far enough. Here's our climate change correspondent, Lisa Holland.
The clock is ticking to save the world from catastrophic climate change. But in a key announcement, Britain says it will speed up its reduction of dangerous greenhouse gases in the next decade and hopes other countries will follow suit.
Lovely. So Britain will speed up reducing dangerous greenhouse gases, CO2, within the next 10 years, she says. Lisa Holland. You caught this bit, didn't you? I mean, I don't know how she could say this with a straight face, this presenter or reporter. Listen.
The clock is ticking to save the world from catastrophic climate change.
To save the world from catastrophic climate change, which is monumental bollocks. It isn't happening. The report goes on, by the way. Think of the economic implications for all of this.
Under the Paris Agreement, almost all countries say they'll put forward new targets for cutting emissions called nationally determined contributions. The UK has currently reduced its emissions by 45% since 1990. In a previous pledge, it said it would cut them by 53% by 2030. Now the UK has declared its new NDC will cut 68% of emissions within a decade. The legally binding target is to reduce emissions overall by 100% by 2050 to reach net zero.
Nationally determined contributions, legally binding. Now, I can tell you, and I think you probably know this, but some of our new listeners, welcome, might not know, these ideas are not determined by governments. They're determined by think tanks. This is how it works. Your government isn't your government. They're just a bunch of show ponies. They're show ponies, aren't they, Jean-Anne? Show ponies. And they take directives from think tanks and lobbyists and bankers and financiers. 68% reduction in 10 years. Fucking L, George. Fucking L, George, said the dragon with the dagger in his chest. Gets a bit funny here, though. Listen.
But Britain's promises can't come quick enough for countries like Bangladesh this year, once again battered by cyclones and floods. Speaking from the capital, Dhaka, scientist Salim al-Haq told me Britain and others need to do more.
We are at the end of receiving those climate impacts, so they may like to pat themselves on the back, and we have to acknowledge they've done a bit. It's not that they aren't doing anything, but they're simply not doing enough. And the enough is what matters. It is whether they can affect the impacts on the climate, of the climate, on the most vulnerable countries and communities. And they're not going to be able to do that.
Oh.
What kind of fuckery is this?
So they tell you that Britain has agreed to reduce its emissions by 68% in 10 years. Legally binding, nationally determined. And the reason we need to do this is because they've had a floodier flood season than normal in Bangladesh. Is anybody believing this? Anybody over 40 then? No? Anybody over 35 believing that CO2 emissions through industrial activity in the UK can cause floods in Bangladesh? Honestly, imagine what it means for industry and agriculture, to name two. I won't dwell on the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the technocratic future they have planned for us, and all that entails, the Internet of Things, smart societies, where in order to get to this 68% reduction in emissions, you'll be told where you can and can't drive, what you can and can't eat, and you'll be surveilled in ways that you never previously thought possible. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Imagine what it means for industry and agriculture. Imagine what it means for people's ability to live and to work and to earn a living and provide for their families. And again, there's no opposition to it. Somebody has just reminded me that I should know better when I say that man-made CO2 is contributing to catastrophic climate change. When I say that is total and utter bollocks, I should remember that we were put right recently by a binman and a lorry driver in Scotland, and the science is now settled. Yes.
You're born and bred in Glasgow, and you've noticed the weather changing.
The rain seems to be getting heavier. Sometimes you get up in the morning and there's bucketing it down.
It's the clip that just keeps on giving.
You're born and bred in Glasgow, and you've noticed the weather changing.
The rain seems to be getting heavier. Sometimes you get up in the morning and there's bucketing it down.
It's bucketing it down. We're going out today with a laugh. You might not laugh. You're probably sick of it. I'm sick of hearing it. But Jean-Claude Van Damme, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, real name Jonathan Van Damme, the biggest Egypt that ever walked the face of the UK, ever, did a question and answer session on Radio 5 and BBC News 24 yesterday, where the public got to ask him questions about coronavirus and the vaccine and all the rest of it. And the sycophantic, deferential, prostitute-esque presenter, Rachel Burden, completely divesting herself of her responsibility to do her job, asked him, would he please use one of those football analogies that we're all so very fond of to tell us where we are in this life battle, this battle of the ages against coronavirus. Use a footy analogy, please, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he duly obliged.
If you want me to do a football analogy, then
this guy. Read Quinton Letts in the Times today, lampooning this clown.
If you want me to do a football analogy, then I have thought about this. I would say that, you know, it's clear in the first half, the away team gave us an absolute battering. And
the away team gave us an awful battering in the first half. The away team is coronavirus. Coronavirus is wearing the pink jerseys today.
What we've done now is it's the 70th minute.
70th minute now, 20 minutes left in the game.
They got a goal. And in the 70th minute, we've now got an equaliser.
We've scored, so it's one each now.
Okay, we've got to hold our nerve now, see if we can get another goal and nick it.
We might have to go to the bench.
But the key thing is not to lose it, not to throw it away at this point, because we've got a point on the board.
Well, we'll keep five at the back then, and maybe two holding midfielders, maybe. Get Fred and Scott McTominay in front of the back four, maybe.
And we've got the draw. So from that perspective, what I'm saying is that we need more vaccines, but we also need people to realise that these are not an instant ticket out of anywhere at the moment. We are in for some hard winter months where people must continue to follow the guidance.
Yeah, follow the guidance. Thinking we bring on a substitute. It's 1-1 now in this fight against coronavirus 19. That's it for Friday's programme. Thanks for spending some of your Friday afternoon with the BBG on Drive Time. As I said, if you missed any of the programmes in the week, use your own podcast provider. It'll be there, Podbean. They've all got it. I upload to Podomatic. It then goes to many, many other providers. It's on YouTube as well. Do remember to check out Trigger Warning TV on YouTube. I mentioned this at the very beginning of the programme, youtube.com/Trigger Warning TV. Some brilliant interviews over the last few weeks with boy Hayden Hewitt, with some incredibly interesting men and women. He's invited me to participate next Thursday. I was glad to accept. He's a terrific guy. youtube.com/Trigger Warning TV. Have yourselves a fantastic weekend. I'll be with you again on Monday at 5 o'clock UK time with a brand new week of radio shows. Speaking of speakeasies and nights on the town, let's go out with Elton John then. You are gay, aren't you, Baldy? Aren't you? I don't know. I'm not telling, is the answer. Don't ask, don't tell. Where the bloody hell is Elton John? Where's Elton John? I asked you. Everything has gone tits up. There he is. Take care of yourselves, as I said. And I'll be with you in spirit until Monday, when I'll be back in person. Bye.